This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Grant is out. Bachelor Party weekend is well underway for our pals, so Chris Russell is in. Let's jump right to the Mattress Warehouse hotline. Oh, we're not jumping to Mattress Warehouse hotline. I would never say that. Anybody who says anything like that's a dumb idiot. It's not what we're going to do. We're going to talk to Will Brinson here in a moment. I thought he was there. Rug got pulled out from under me. And Dar made a face, Russell. He made one of those, oh my God, I rolled the dice and then it went bad in my own pants. You know the face I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Where like you think you just squeeze it out and it turned rotten.
Sure. There was some panic there. Sorry.
You'll own that. Don't apologize. It's not there. It's not your fault. So anyway, we'll talk to Will Brinson here in a second.
That's a face. That's a feeling you do not. I mean, let me repeat. Do not
want
to have.
You don't want that. But it was a panicked face. And poor Eric, who's filling in for Tommy today, he made a face too. He made a secondhand panic face when I said, let's throw it to the hotline because it's there. And then all of a sudden it was gone. And now all of a sudden I look like a great big jackass. I'm the one that wears that, Dar. It's not a big deal.
Let me ask you a question. Be honest with me.
Okay.
Do you think Tommy took the day off today because he knew I was filling in for Grant?
I hate to say
and
things
he secretly
like.
Secretly does not like me.
I hate to say things like 100% that's why. Anyway, later on in the show, we'll break down all the weekend's playoff games. So I just hate to say something like that. So. And I want to get into the games with Will. I also want to get into our discussion that we just had with him when he's on with us about the application of the Rooney Rule and everything else. It just hasn't worked right to this point. What is your favorite game of this weekend, if you have to pick one?
So.
And you could choose the Capitals if you want to be a hipster.
Yeah. I think the best game, you know, of course, as you line it up on paper, would be the New Orleans Saints and the Minnesota Vikings, right? I think that's
got
the best chance because you have a dynamic offense with a much improved defense and a pretty good special teams unit that New Orleans has against on the road against a great defense, a somehow pretty productive offense, and again, a pretty good special teams unit. So all across the board, I think that's the best matchup. The one that I think intrigues me the most just from a, I wonder what's going to happen here, actually is Tennessee at New England. I know that sounds crazy because Tennessee is limited, but I'm really curious to see what New England looks like.
Let's see what Will Brinson thinks. Joins us on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Will, good afternoon. Thanks for the time, bud.
Hey, Will.
What's up? You guys are really desperate if you're pumping up Titans Patriots. Wait, no, I'm just kidding. Titans Patriots on CBS. It's going to be a tremendous game.
It's probably the game of the weekend. It's only a 14.5-point spread.
Wait, let me tweet this. Will Brinson says Patriots Titans sucks, right? And not to watch it on CBS.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
No, actually, I was talking with Coach Bill Cowher on the Pick Six podcast, which people can subscribe to on iTunes. And Coach, you know, obviously worked with Mike Mularkey and Dick LeBeau, and he was sort of outlining, maybe not how to stop Tom Brady because you know, just don't do that, but sort of like the game plan for the Titans. And I wrote about this yesterday too. I mean, there's a path for them to beat the Patriots, right? Like, get a turnover, get some sort of special teams play. Maybe Adoree Jackson returns a punt for a touchdown. Get a lead, feed Derrick Henry, and pray, and maybe have Tom Brady kidnapped by a row of abandoned gypsies or something.
He maybe gets the flu. It's going around. At Will Brinson on Twitter. Give him a follow if you care about the foosball information. Will, as we go into this weekend, to me, let's start with the marquee game, my favorite one, the last game of the weekend, New Orleans, Minnesota. People, it's funny how this happens. Everyone's enamored with New Orleans right now, and they're really good, and they deserve our attention. But people kind of forgot that Minnesota's got a pretty good body of work themselves, and I think they're relatively healthy heading into this ball game. How do you see it going? And do you know what I mean when we talk about we just saw New Orleans playing, how impressive were they against Carolina, and everyone's kind of got them as the sexy pick?
Yeah, I mean, this is recency bias. Happens all the time in football when we're analyzing this stuff on a week-to-week basis. I mean, I think the thing to remember, too, about New Orleans is that they weren't that great on defense against the Panthers. I mean, they were really, you know, the Panthers sold out to stop the run, and they did that. Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram had 3,000 scrimmage yards in the regular season combined. They had 63 scrimmage yards combined against the Panthers in the wild card round. But the problem is, even if you, you know, against Minnesota, the Vikings don't have to sell out to stop the run and let Drew Brees have freedom passing. I mean, they can limit the run with their front four and their front seven, and then you have Xavier Rhodes on the back end with Harrison Smith erasing things. I mean, this is the best defense in football, I think. Better than the Jaguars, better than anybody else out there. And Minnesota is just very even on defense. To me, no, look, don't get me wrong, the Saints are a great offensive team. Sean Payton is a great game planner. He's been really good this year calling plays. I think it basically comes down to what can the Vikings offense do against the Saints defense. And if the Saints defense can create turnovers, then they can win that game. I don't know. I mean, like I go both ways on this. I think I picked New Orleans primarily because playoff experience. You know, I mean, if you look at these games, there's a wide disparity, right? Drew Brees, 12 playoff starts, feels like it should probably be more. It's not. Case Keenum, 0. Matt Ryan, 9. You know, you have Nick Foles with 1. Blake Bortles with 1. Ben Roethlisberger with 20. Tom Brady, 34. And Marcus Mariota, 1. So I think that experience matters a little bit, and that's why I lean towards the Saints. But if you were to tell me that everybody's picking the Saints and that the line moved from Vikings minus 3.5 to Vikings minus 5, then I would be more inclined to take the Vikings.
Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of people, surprisingly, somewhat, are taking the Saints. I wanted to ask you about the other NFC game. First up tomorrow afternoon at the Link in Philadelphia. We all know about Nick Foles and Philadelphia and that quarterback situation. Somehow, some way, maybe it's possible Nate Sudfeld could play for the Eagles tomorrow, which is scary. But specifically about the Eagles' defense and I guess their run offense with the kind of guys that they have there, do you think there's any way possible, as even the one seed off the bye, fresh, rejuvenated, all of that, that they can, you know, shut down enough of the Falcons' somewhat inconsistent offensive attack, and then more importantly, run the football against Atlanta, because the Rams were able to when they tried. They just didn't try enough last Saturday night.
Yeah, of course I think they can. I mean, look, this is a Eagles team that is now sufficiently motivated by the snub factor, having been made the first ever one seed to be an underdog at home in the divisional round. I think they're pretty, I mean, to be crass, I think they're pretty pissed off about it, honestly. And, you know, Lane Johnson was like, what are we, the Browns? You know, they didn't 52 other guys who stood around and stared at Carson Wentz while he created magic for the first 12 weeks. I mean, this is a well-built team. They have some deficiencies on the back end and the secondary on defense. But, you know, up front, I mean, they're loaded on the defensive line between Fletcher Cox, Timmy Jernigan, Brandon Graham, Vinny Curry, Chris Long, Derek Barnett. I mean, they send pass rushers after pass rushers after pass rushers, and that can be a problem for anybody, even Matt Ryan. You know, the one thing I worry about if you're an Eagles fan is that when you look at what Julio Jones has done in the playoffs, take out the Seahawks matchups when he's been up against Richard Sherman one-on-one, and he's averaging over 100 yards per game receiving. I mean, this is a guy who's a devastating weapon in the passing game. Everybody knows that, but especially so when it comes to, you know, the playoffs. He's catching 80% of his targets in the playoffs. That's absurd. And so I could see Julio Jones having a big day against that secondary and getting loose. I think just like the Titans, it's imperative that the Eagles get up early and keep it close or have a lead and be able to run with the lead if they want to win this game. Because I just don't see a path where the Eagles get down 14-0 early, but, you know, pick six from Nick Foles and the big play to Julio Jones on the first three Falcons possessions or something. And then the Eagles have to, you know, rely on Nick Foles, get out of their comfort zone, be unable to run the ball with Jay Ajayi and LeGarrette Blount downhill, and be forced to pass a bunch. I just don't see a path if that happens for the Eagles to win. But just like the Vikings, you know, I don't love the idea that everyone is on Atlanta and it's very obvious that Atlanta is going to win. Obvious things don't often happen in the NFL, as we saw last week when the Titans beat the Chiefs and what was, I'm drawing a blank. The other upset game that happened, the Falcons beat the Rams. I mean, they were 6-point dogs too.
Will Brinson, CBS Sports, is with us. One more from me here, Will. I look at this Jacksonville-Pittsburgh game. The sneaky thing, I think, everyone thinks of Jacksonville as this excellent defense, and they are. They've got the numbers to kind of back it up. They're sneaky, not that good against the run. Do you see this as maybe Pittsburgh isn't going to turn the ball over a million times like they did last time? I think this may be an early and often Le'Veon Bell game, and I know that sounds blasphemous against this Jacksonville defense, but I could see them gouging them against the run and then using some of that play action. Is that something kind of a hidden storyline, or am I inventing it?
Yeah. No, I think that's spot on. I mean, look, if you're the Steelers, what you don't want is the formula that happened in week five, which is Ben Roethlisberger throwing the ball 55 times. I mean, I don't care if you're Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Dan Marino, whoever you are in the history, Joe Montana, whoever it is, you don't want to throw the ball 55 times and run it 15 times. That is a formula for throwing five interceptions and losing the game, especially when you have an all-pro running back in Le'Veon Bell. So I think it's paramount for the Steelers that they have balance on offense, and I think that does start with coming – I mean, I'm not saying that they're going to come out running the ball. Maybe it's like Georgia versus Bama in the title game where, Jim Chaney scripted the first – I think it was like the first six plays were all passes. Maybe you do that and you do these dump-offs across the middle, utilize Juju on crossers, find Jesse James, Vance McDonald, stay away from the corners early on, throw the Jaguars defense off their, off their plan, and then you start pounding the ball with Le'Veon Bell and you get a heavy dose of Bell. And if you look at the lanes that LeSean McCoy had last week against the Jaguars, you can totally see a situation where Le'Veon Bell gets those lanes and ends up picking up chunk yardage. And I think that's the real danger for Jacksonville is if he's running the ball really well and it opens up those shots down the field to Antonio Brown. And let's not forget, I think Antonio Brown had 150 receiving yards against the Jaguars in week five too. You open those up and all of a sudden that defense sort of becomes discombobulated. And if the Steelers get a lead, good night. I mean, if the Steelers are up 14-0, it's over because I'm hesitating to say X team can't come back from X lead ever again after the Titans came back.
Yeah, I was going to say, right?
Yeah, because they're not even built to, like, they ran their way back there. It's crazy. But I just don't see a scenario where the Steelers get up 14-0, 17-0, and the Jaguars just try and get 2.5 yards per carry, out of Leonard Fournette to storm their way back. I just don't see that happening. They would have to rely on Blake Bortles. Interesting stats on Bortles, though. If you go and look at it, and Pete Prisco pointed this out on our podcast, and my colleague Sean Wagner wrote about it for CBS. Bortles is substantially better throwing the ball on early down. And so I think that the Jaguars will probably try and do that. Basically, the whole thing boils down to Bortles is not good in obvious passing situations because the defense is planning for it. He gets nervous or whatever it is, and he doesn't pass as well. So it'd be interesting to see if they come out guns blazing with Bortles, letting him throw early and trying to, sort of do the reverse of what the Steelers want to do.
Will, always good, buddy. Enjoy the weekend, okay? Thanks for hopping on.
Thanks, Will.
Yeah, guys, enjoy the football. Take it easy.
See you, pal. There he goes, at Will Brinson. All right, let's get these games broken down, you and me, Russell. I want to do the Saturday games first, so that's Atlanta, Philly, Tennessee, New England.
Yeah.
Then at 1:30, we'll do the Sunday games, Jacksonville, Pittsburgh, New Orleans, Minnesota. I want to get nitty-gritty. I want matchups you're looking forward to, key for each team, underrated player, storyline, whatever you want. Let's deep dive on these games that I think is the best football weekend of the year.
Amen.
Brent and Danny next on FAN. Welcome back to the show. It's Brent and Danny Rachao on 106.7 The Fan. Grant out, Russell in, all good. GP will be back on a Tuesday. On a Tuesday, we'll hang out. Review all the weekend's games and whatnot. As a reminder, we're not here on Monday. Dar had a great opportunity to knock us around, Russell, because Grant and I are always, even though I've lived 38 years on this planet, Grant is a young old man as well, we're always surprised at days off. Like, it never occurs to us that, oh, Monday, of course, it's MLK's birthday. Of course, it's off. Or, it's a President's Day or it's Arbor Day. I'm always surprised when I have Columbus Day off or whatever else. I never know when it's coming. Dar always knows, and he can't believe that we can't believe it. So he had an opportunity to do a little bit of condescension.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised that you wouldn't, circle that on your calendar, man.
I mean, I never know.
I mean, Like, because I know this as a non Monday through Friday regular, right. I guess, or whatever I am.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I know, oh, it's Martin Luther King Day. That means I'm going to have, that means I'm going to be working during the day as opposed to at night, usually. I mean, barring obviously some weird circumstance.
Well, it only comes every year, Russell.
Yes.
The day.
But the same could be said for Danny. It only comes every year, and every year they have off.
And every year they're surprised.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. And that's why he does this, what he's doing right now, which is he feels so full of himself. And he's Vince McMahoning it to the ring.
Right. He's making fun of you, not necessarily making fun of me.
No, it's me. I'm wearing this one.
Okay.
I am always surprised when days off occur. I'm always surprised when we don't work on a Monday. I've never been able to master sort of the rhythms of that. It's Labor Day. Of course it is.
Perhaps you should check your work email.
But that's an impossible task. Yeah, that's an impossible task. You may as well admit to find the golden idol and Indiana Jones loses to Belloc at the beginning. There's no chance. It's near impossible.
You have a better chance of finding an outlet to plug your computer into in the studio.
Seriously. And Russell, by the way, picked the furthest outlet away from his. It's got to go across himself, and then he reverses because his power cord's on the wrong side. Or his outlet's on the wrong side of his computer?
Because I can't find another outlet, which you pointed out to me, because you're familiar with the studio,
right.
As all this stuff can attest.
I'm sitting where Grant normally sits, so I've got the call screen in front of me. Russell's sitting in my spot. So Grant's usually on the left, I'm on the right. Russell's in my usual right-handed seat. And because I know the seat, I explained to him, hey, there's an outlet right there next to you. His power outlet is on the right side of his computer. But he still chose the left. We have to go around a pole, like kind of near himself, up under his legs and a lot of his business, then around the computer itself to get to the right side. He's got a right-on-right situation, easily accessible, but he chose the more difficult path, and that, to me, typifies my pal Chris.
The point is, a groundhog would have a better chance of finding a freaking power outlet in this studio. That's the problem. I mean, it is not designed properly to deal with dumb radio people.
Wait, are you saying CBS Radio did something incorrectly when they built this studio?
I didn't say that. I'm just simply pointing out a fact that it is very difficult to find a power outlet that is in a good spot to plug in so that you don't clonk your head
is that I pointed out where it was as he was plugging it into the left power outlet, which again is further away.
But I had already done it and struggled.
I'm just glad you found a headphone jack, because that was a struggle this morning, too.
Listen, boys, it is not easy being the Rooster.
You still have to get outs without your best stuff, and that's what Rooster finds a way to do every
day. It is. Yeah, exactly. I'm like Gio Gonzalez on most days.
All right,
curveball ain't working.
Let's get into these playoff matchups. I want to start Atlanta and Philly here, Russell. Yes. To me, this is always about when you've got two groups that are strong on one side of the ball. Mm-hmm. Philadelphia's defense is the best unit in the game. I would say, although Atlanta's defense is coming on.
Oh, in the game between, yes.
In this game.
Right.
Atlanta's offense right now, this minute, stronger than Philadelphia's. Yep. Now, if you play this game early on in the season, mm-hmm. Philadelphia's offense with Carson mm-hmm. Wentz. I always think it's about what the second unit does against mm-hmm. the other team's second unit, if that makes any sense. To me, this game is about what Philadelphia's offense does to Atlanta's defense.
Right.
Atlanta's defense has been good, especially the second half of the mm-hmm. season. To me, it's their speed at the three levels. I love Deion Jones in the middle.
I agree.
Grady Jarrett is not necessarily that fast, but is a beast. Up the middle for Atlanta, it's tougher to run on them, and it lets the Claibornes of the world, Beasley get upfield. Mm-hmm. Keanu Neal on the back end, I like their secondary, Trufant and company. I think that's what runs the day for Philadelphia, is what their defense can do to slow down Philadelphia's offense.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they tackle really, really, really well, Atlanta. They take great angles. They get guys down to the ground. They're not dirty. They're fast. They're aggressive. Again, I think, that's part of what Dan Quinn has built up there, even though they were known as an offensive first team last year. It took a little while to build a defense the way Seattle built a defense in Seattle without having some of the resources necessarily that Seattle ultimately did, and while, of course, being propelled into a big-time national stage much earlier than probably people anticipated. So that's number one. They shut down. If they can shut down Philadelphia's run tomorrow, they will absolutely win this game. There is no doubt about it, because we all know, whether it's Nick Foles or Nate Sudfeld, Philadelphia's passing offense is going to struggle or be inconsistent, period, if they are one-dimensional, and if Atlanta's can pin their ears back and, again, stop the run. Real quickly, I think what's really interesting in this game is, can Philadelphia's run defense, which is the best in the NFL, shut down Tevin Coleman and Devontae Freeman. And remember, Freeman's fumbled a couple of times at the goal line in key situations down the stretch. If they can do that, even though you don't love your chances, Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, Mohamed Sanu, even though you don't love your chances that way, if they can shut down Atlanta's run and, again, make them one-dimensional, that offensive line for the Falcons isn't very good, and the pass rush for the Eagles can get home.
The guy that I think needs to be huge for Philadelphia, I don't think you can connect to the outside guys. I don't think it'll be a big old Alshon Jeffrey show, maybe a red zone situation. I don't know how productive the receivers, Aguilar and company, are going to be.
Zach Ertz is
the guy. If he balls out in this game, bailing him out on some third downs, they keep the football, I think Philadelphia still has a shot. We're counting them out, I think, prematurely. All right, we got three games to do. Tennessee, New England, Jacksonville, Pittsburgh, New Orleans, Minnesota. Then our predictions at 1:45. Russell in for Grant. It's Grant and Danny here on The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Some programming notations for the rest of this day. All right. On 106.7, The Fan on CDVTW, in addition to the normal Baseball Friday lineup, where Dukes goes into the new statistics he's invented as Baseball Dukes. He's predicted the World Series winners up to the years 2045. Congratulations to all the winners.
Right.
He will go into the free agent
this
market.
This is one of my favorite bits that you do, by the way.
And his least favorite. He's going to go into the lack of money and guaranteed years for power hitters. Scott Boras's clients needing, of course, to readjust their expectations.
Right.
But he's, you know, he always wins with patience.
Launch angle
of course.
Stuff.
Yeah, I mean, he's talking about yesterday, you missed it. He talked about the evolution of the cutter as the pitch of baseball. Remember, the splitter was the pitch of the 80s, the slider the pitch of the 90s. 2000s, nobody was really sure. Now we know this is the era of the cutter and how it's double-edged, because you mess up your cutter, it's long ball material. I think he's got a correlation, and he was telling me about it off-air just now, between the rise of cutter percentages and the recent home run binges that have happened in the non-steroid era. Mm-hmm. Because, again, you miss with a cutter, it's a flat fastball, it's a BP fastball, thanks for stopping by in the middle of the plate.
Right.
He's got some fascinating takes on that. In addition to that, Sean Salisbury at 3.
Uh-huh.
The fast food pinata at 3:45.
Let me tell you something. I just got an exhaustive preview of the fast food pinata. It's going to be special.
I just love how seriously Mullins takes it.
I do too.
That's what I like
I love
the most.
The notes. I mean, he puts more notes and like thought and theory into the fast food pinata than I probably do into a radio show. Which is not good for me. But.
And I think if he tried to shtick it up, it would be bad. But he's deadly serious about it, which is what makes it to me.
He is.
And also the very in shape
Craig Hoffman.
Craig Hoffman will have Lorenzo Alexander on tonight.
Nice.
As we're talking about Jacksonville, Pittsburgh here in a second.
Great.
Lorenzo Alexander just finished a great week. It wasn't his bad that they lost.
No. He was awesome.
He was really good. So there's some programming notations. That's
beautiful.
I believe at 7:00.
And
this
before
evening.
The Caps and Canes meet for a second game in 2 nights.
That's right. Good point by you.
Maybe somehow Grant could make his way up to the broadcast booth and unseat John Walton for, I don't know, 10 minutes or so, give John a little break.
It would require John to breathe. I've never seen him do that. Have you ever been in the booth while he's doing his bit?
Yeah, I have once.
It is spectacular.
It was great. John is tremendous. John does not need a break. But I'm just saying, Grant happens to be in Raleigh, right? Or he's scheduled.
That's right. He's down there.
In Raleigh. So maybe he could, you know, have a couple of beers or whatever Grant drinks. And then take to the microphone and call the game.
Walton is nonstop. He doesn't breathe. Yeah. Energy's incredible. He is amazing. Let's get into this Tennessee Titans New England game.
Yes.
Let's do this one quick because we both kind of agree this is a Patriots walk.
Right.
How do they not do it? How do the Patriots keep this close? And how does Tennessee maybe get over the hump?
Well, again, turnovers obviously number one for Tennessee is one way you can level it out. The biggest way, two big ways that I think Tennessee can keep this game close and have at least a somewhat decent chance of making this a somewhat entertaining game. I don't think they can win, obviously, but I do think they'll cover is. One, run the ball, obviously, with Derrick Henry as effectively as they were able to in the second half last week. We all understand that.
Yep.
Two, more importantly, you've got to pressure Tom Brady up the middle and attack him on either side of the A-gap, because we all know he doesn't have the mobility to flush out and to buy a lot of extra time. That's the only way you can do it. And I would expect to see a bunch of stunts and twists and all that crap. Maybe a Rakpo trying to, you know, line up on the edge and kind of twisting up into the center A-gap to try and blow up Tom Brady, because that's the only chance you got.
I think if you blitz, you're dead. I think if you try to overcommit guys in the rush, they will kill you. With that short, quick precision passing.
If you play zone and sit back and conservative, he's going to pick you apart.
He's going to pick you apart. I think you do your bit where you got a double team, you got to pick a guy, you got to rotate your coverage, obviously. You're not going to out cerebral the guy, but you've got to hope that your constant rotation. You can't play the same coverage more than a handful of times.
That's fair.
You've got to rush with four, stunt, TE games, all that crap. See if you can win up there. Basically, try to cover with seven all the time. That's when he struggled the most. He doesn't struggle. It's Tom Brady, for God's sakes. He's worse when there are more guys in coverage. If you commit to the blitz, good night, Irene. They're going to get it picked up, and the ball's coming out.
Maybe you don't have to commit to the blitz if you get that natural pass rush pressure. But my point is, you're probably not going to get that sustained enough unless you send extra heat. And I understand what that exposes you to, but here's what I know. Even if you, again, sit back in a soft zone and play seven in coverage, you know, four underneath and whatever permutations you want, he's going to pick you apart too. The only time Tom Brady struggles is when you get bodies on him, when you get hits on him, when you knock him down, when you get hands in your face. See the Giants Super Bowl wins. See last year at this time in this game, the Houston Texans.
Yep.
Now a very good defense. See what they did to Tom Brady. And that's how you answer, Tom. That's the only chance you have.
Let's go to Jacksonville, Pittsburgh here. I'm writing this up as a Pittsburgh victory. I think it's going to be close, by the way. Yeah. I don't think it's going to be blowout city. I don't think you can blow out this Jacksonville defense. But I talked about this with Will Brinson earlier on here, Russell. Jacksonville's defense is excellent. Minnesota's got the best defense in the sport because they're good against everything.
Right.
Jacksonville was, I think, 20th or 21st.
They're not very good against the run.
That includes a few hiccup games that were early this season.
Right.
The Jets ran the ball for 256 yards against them. They've got a couple in the second half of the season where the Colts ran for 140, the Seahawks 140. These are bad running teams.
Darius has made them better, but not good enough.
So I think this is how Pittsburgh is going to go about this. It may not be sexy early. It'll be some attrition. But I think Pittsburgh's confident enough in their defense, even without Shazier, to use the T.J. Watts of the world, to use Hayward, to slow down that rushing attack, because that's where they are. If you force Bortles and obvious passing downs, your offense is going to be atrocious. We saw that this past week. I think Pittsburgh's going to run the ball more than we think.
I agree with you. They only did it, I think, 15, 16 times in the first matchup. As Will kind of alluded to, Ben passed obviously a lot. You cannot go into it against that secondary, against that pass rush with that plan. So you're going to see a ton of Le'Veon Bell, no doubt about it. First and foremost, the only way I think Jacksonville can win this game, again, if somehow you get three or four turnovers, one, which is probably not going to happen again. Two, if somehow, some way, that Cole, whatever his name is, the receiver, the young receiver that can stretch the field vertically, not, I forgot his name.
It's Keelan Cole. Is that
Keelan
you're talking
Cole,
about?
Yeah, there you go. I forgot his first name. I got the last name right. All right, so if Cole can find a coverage bust, you know, against either Artie Burns, who's a little bit banged up, or even Joe Hayden, who's been banged up and is kind of a little older in the two. That's the only way I think Jacksonville can have success offensively. Because even Leonard Fournette, who had a 90-yard touchdown run against Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh earlier this year, he hadn't been the same guy the last three or four weeks. He was banged up at the end of the regular season. Teams are zeroing in on him. I don't see how... I would be surprised if Leonard Fournette goes off and has a big-time game in this one.
Yeah, I think you keep him in front. 3.9 yards per carry for the season. Yeah, he's fine. I mean, but everybody knows it's coming. So I'd like to see him on a more balanced and better offense. Quickly, let's do the most important game. Not most important, probably the best on paper game of the weekend. New Orleans-Minnesota. Again, I said this before when talking Atlanta-Philly. The second unit of both teams is what's going to decide this thing. New Orleans' defense, susceptible. They're going to give stuff up, but they're also going to get after you. Cameron Jordan is a beast. I love Lattimore as the cornerback.
Sure.
Jumping some stuff. If they turn you over, you win. Minnesota doesn't turn over. That's what makes them special. I think Minnesota's offense is going to have their way with New Orleans. It won't be like week one where Sam Bradford was 9 of 10 on passes over 20 yards and they killed him that way. It's a different team now on both fronts. But I think Minnesota's offense with their double receivers, with Rudolph and with McKinnon, and maybe Latavius Murray, to a degree, are going to have some success. I think this is a down-to-the-wire, really good football game.
Yeah, I look for some of the injuries on the Saints secondary side, specifically at one of their other cornerback positions opposite Lattimore, where you have a guy Crawley playing and starting, and a couple of other young guys. And also, don't forget, Kenny Vaccaro, former first-round pick, who's having a pretty decent year early on. He's also out for the season and out for this game. I think Minnesota's double threat, like you said, of Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs going to get to work, assuming that Minnesota's offensive line, which is better this year, gives some help against Cam Jordan and those guys. Manti Te'o is a guy who I think has been playing really, really well for the New Orleans Saints.
Not a lot of credit there, you're right.
And Von Bell has 5.5 sacks, Danny. 5.5 sacks for a safety. About that. So these are the chances that New Orleans, they're going to have to, again, generate turnovers. They're going to have to generate pass rush from weird spots, I think, to try and slow down this Minnesota offense, which sounds weird when you think about Case Keenum playing. But the biggest thing, I think everybody thinks the Saints can win this game because of the double running back, because of Drew Brees, because of Ted Ginn, because of Thomas. I think this Vikings defense, especially in that place, is going to be virtually impossible to break down. And even though Kirk Cousins and the Redskins put up a lot of points, again, that was on the road too. Mm-hmm. In that building, in that environment, I would be surprised, as great as New Orleans is on offense, if they can score more than 17 points.
Xavier Rhodes, to me, is the guy that makes that possible. Yeah. He's going to shove it on Michael Thomas. I think Thomas gets negated in this game. That's going to make it someone else has to do it.
Yes.
Whether you put Kamara out, get him in some space, you'd see him in the slot a bunch of times. I bet you Sean Payton's got some Ingram and Kamara in the game at the same time. Sets all planned.
Especially on fourth down, the little flip play action, flip stuff. And also special teams. If New Orleans can somehow win this game, Kamara had the big kickoff return for a touchdown a couple of weeks ago against Tampa. That might be the only way they can win this game, is if they get a big play on special teams and get the ball, obviously touchdown good, but get the ball deep inside Minnesota territory.
Speaking of those big plays, the Ted Ginn, I guess I sort of put him against Harrison Smith, one of the best safeties in football. Mm-hmm. Is there a busted coverage there? Is there one big play that kind of changes this game? I think if you keep New Orleans in front and you're Minnesota, you got a great chance to do this at home.
Yeah, I don't think it comes against Harrison Smith, but I do think their other corner, Trey Waynes, right? Is it Trey Waynes? Yeah,
I think it's
Trey
Waynes.
Yeah, Waynes and or Marcus Sherrills. Those guys are somewhat susceptible because, again, like you said, Xavier Rhodes is going to shut down Mike Thomas for the most part, and you're not going to try and target or attack Xavier Rhodes.
Let's do some predictions next. We've got four games. It's, again, my favorite football weekend of the year, maybe outside of the opening weekend because it's new. It's a Christmas present. We're opening it up. This is the best of the best. Four really good games usually kind of throughout this weekend. It's Chris Russell, Danny Ruye with you. Grant and Danny, one more segment left on the Fan. A mere 5 minutes and change left in this radio program. CDVTW is next. I have seen Dukes. I've seen his Fruitcake Emporium. I've seen them out and about. They are doing what they do to get ready for the show. Plenty of things will go down on that program, including arguments for VORP has fallen out of fashion among some baseball pundits. The argument for VORP, top of the show before he talks to Mike Jones of the USA Today.
I always get disappointed when your tease doesn't match the first couple of minutes of Chad's show, and he saves it for drive time. Like,
of course,
when he saves it for the most highly rated portion of the program and the most listened to part of the day, I always get a little bit disappointed, like almost like I'm being misled to the altar, you know?
I understand that. I just go on what I'm told. Uh-huh. And like, I see him concocting things in his baseball lab. And I have to tease it because I look forward to that content.
Old Baseball Dukes.
Always, as always, at 800-636-1067. He'll stop the show no matter what. No matter the topic, if you call him and ask him a baseball question, he'll answer it and probably do an hour on it. So that's how you get that. Let's make our predictions. Let's go chronological order here, Russell, through the four games this weekend. Give me your score, rationale therein, and I shall give you mine. Show me yours, I'll show you mine. Atlanta at Philadelphia. Atlanta, I believe, a 4-point favorite in this one.
Yeehaw. I'm going Atlanta 21-14 in the road win. Not an upset, I guess, just by reality. I just think too much Atlanta on defense, along with their passing offense, matching up pretty good against Philadelphia somewhat suspect secondary. So I'm going to go 21-14 Atlanta with a second consecutive Saturday road victory in the NFC playoffs.
27-23 Falcons in this one. I think it's closer than people think.
Right.
I think it's closer
and
than people
scoring.
Think. Yeah, I think Philadelphia can do this. Now, I don't think they're going to because, again, it'll come down to Nick Foles-ing. I think people have sort of forgotten that Philadelphia is still really good. I know they didn't have the kind of ending that everybody wants, even though they won most of those last few games down the stretch. But their eyes are too close to this bad Nick Foles thing. I think with a little bit of time to prepare, they'll have some things that they haven't seen yet, and I think Peterson will have them ready, but they're going to lose ultimately.
I want to see Nate Sudfeld replace Nick Foles and lead the Eagles to victory just to have to me, it would
You'll
just
take your
be
victory
glorious. Oh, it'd be glorious.
Tennessee at New England. New England, 13.5-point favorites.
So I'm going to go Tennessee will cover. New England will win, let's call it 27-17. I think New England gets a key turnover when Tennessee is moving the football some point early to mid-fourth quarter, which ultimately expands the lead. It's a tight game throughout. I think it's a defensive slugfest because I think Tennessee will muddy up the waters with the run and their pass rush enough to keep them competitive.
I hear that, and I'm going to tell you it's going to go like this. Kicking and screaming, bound and gagged. Tennessee is going to be dragged out back, out past the patio, out past some of the tree line, and to the edge. There'll be this area that's called the woodshed.
Uh-huh.
They're going to have to look at every one of New England's power tools. It's going to be a bludgeoning. This is a controversy swirling around. Nobody believed in us. We're going to prove you all wrong. Big middle finger game to the league and everybody else that read the Seth Wickersham story. And poor Tennessee is in the eye of the storm. I think New England beats the bleep out of them.
The buzzards are going to be circling around.
It will be tumultuous is what I'm going with. I've got a 38-13 drubbing. It'll be the lone of the weekend. Let's go Jacksonville at Pittsburgh, Russell, quickly.
Jacksonville loses. Pittsburgh wins, obviously, 17-7. Is that quick? Maybe too quick.
Pretty quick. No, that was fun.
Pittsburgh 17-7, right?
I got myself in this one. I think it's 20-16. I don't think it's going to be as high as scoring. Pittsburgh's going to win this game.
Okay.
Jacksonville's going to keep it close. That defense is just so factual. They're so good. They're going to give up some running yards in this game, but there will be ultimate passing times. Ramsey's so good. They're so great in the pass rush game. Ngakoue's excellent. Campbell is excellent. They will get after Ben Roethlisberger and make it tough. I think this ultimately gets decided by Pittsburgh turning them over. Final game of the weekend, New Orleans mini.
I got Minnesota winning 27-21. I think Minnesota's offense better than we think, even though people are finally giving them credit over the last couple of weeks because of Case Keenum. I think Minnesota's offense better than we think. I think New Orleans defense worse, especially on the back end, than we think.
27-26, Minnesota wins it.
Oh,
27-26.
I think earlier in the week you had the Saints, so you changed, right?
I did. As the line went up to 5 points in this ballgame, I kind of decided, wait a minute, there's something that I'm missing here. Minnesota's too good is my recency effect. I initially thought New Orleans. I started to look at it a little bit. I think Minnesota's defense does it because of Xavier Rhodes.
I always worry about teams coming off the bye, though, too. Even though it's great to rest, rejuvenate, get your body fresh, I think it takes these teams a long time, quarter and a half, sometimes a half, to get back into a rhythm again. Sometimes that's just enough to lose a game.
You might be onto something. I want to remind you, 106.7 The Fan Live is sold out. The only way in is to win. Starting January 16th, listen to Chad Dukes versus the World every afternoon at 5:20 for your chance to win a pair of tickets presented by the Purple Heart Foundation. Details at thefandc.com/live. Russell, thank you, buddy. It was fun.
Yeah, thank you. I'm off to New York City. I'll see you when I...
New York City for Russell, for E-Rock, for Dar. I am Danny. CDBTW is up next. Have a little look.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.